the summer that all of this happened was the end of the 60s, going into the 70s, when there was a general feeling in the country that there needed to be a real look at what social provision meant in societies under a lot of stress. And this grew out of, I think, some of the wider action that was happening, not just in the country, but in other countries. I mean, 1968 was the classic year when people started to challenge the status quo. Here in Notting Hill, that manifested itself in some of the issues I've already mentioned, like the need to address social housing, better facilities for underprovided care for children, where parents were under pressure to go out to work, but where they didn't have the money to buy expensive childcare, and it wasn't really a provision that was around. There was this sense that we didn't have to rely on professionals or more established voluntary organisations to come in provide care. There was some care going on already by of the more traditional children's voluntary organisations. There was this sense of optimism that we could actually get together ourselves and do things. So that was, again, the basis of some of the examples that I learnt from when I visited various Head Start projects in America, in parts of Harlem in New York, and in some of the inner cities in Boston. And I was very struck by the commitment by people working in these children's Head Start establishments, reaching out to the wider community. So I came back with this very optimistic, empowered vision that you don't have to wait for a professional to come in. You can train mums themselves to develop skills that perhaps nobody had ever asked them or thought they could have those abilities and skills. And that was very much the model I had in mind when I thought, well, we could set up some kind of provision, however modest it was, to see what would happen if we found some premises and we talked to local parents about what they wanted to see for their children, but not just talk to them. If they wanted to, they could be involved in setting it up. And I was fortunate that one of the key people that was really my partner in all of this was a young woman with three young children living on very low income, a lot of additional benefits, a single parent living in one of the Colville houses round the corner. And she was the nearest way to describe her was she was actually an absolute fighter and campaigner for better facilities for everybody. And she was fearless. She would go to council meetings. She would, in Kensington and Chelsea, she would identify who was involved as a council member in doing something and would challenge them directly. And she very much wanted to work with me to set up something for children. So everything I did with her as my partner. And because also it was very important to have direct links into those communities where I was an outsider. Mm-hmm. I have to admit that, you know, I wasn't living in those very difficult conditions, but she was, and she had this amazing network of contacts and friends. So she was the person through which, she was a conduit through to those groups. So when we first thought up this idea, I said, what would it be like, Pat? And she was called Pat McDonald. And she does have a whole other history, which I'll refer to a bit later on. But she said, well, we'll look around for premises. It so happened that where we met every week in the church hall round the corner, the All Saints Church, they had a smaller room, which was the vestry. And she said, oh, I'll ask the vicar. And she was on great terms with the vicars locally, who were becoming more involved through more formal organisations in the borough of Kensington Chelsea in a series of very good local projects. They were very committed to also supporting the wider community. So we got permission from the church to use the festry as a little playgroup area. And then we said, well, we need equipment. And so Pat and I decided, well, we'll run jumble sales and we'll raise money, which is what we did. And then we started to identify who were the most needy parents. In the meantime, we were meeting young parents with children, and they were listing all the things that they wanted to be able to do but couldn't do because they were just busy surviving. You know, some of them had quite difficult lives. And so we said, well, how would you feel if we set up a facility for you, I mean, for the kids to come and play every morning? And they all welcomed that with open arms. And what was also very clear, that at the time, a lot of the local women in particular had to go out and do other work to survive, and they would then leave their children with what were identified as illegal childminders. In other words, childminders who were not formally registered with the council, so were not open to inspection or basic facilities for children. And we did know, I mean, Pat certainly knew of families in the blocks where she lived who were leaving their children often in very unsatisfactory conditions. And we decided very early, and when I say we talked about this a lot between ourselves, that we weren't going to do what the local social work organisations wanted, or worked in the same area we're doing, that we would say, well, we'll help you, we'll take care. We decided that what we would do would try to be non-judgmental and say, recognise that there was a problem about childcare and deliberately establish a good rapport with a lot of the women who were in need and say, look, why don't you just bring your kid along to the playgroup one morning? So we tried very consciously to be, not to say, you know, you can't come because it's not satisfactory. Come and we'll take it from there. And we gradually, it took time, but we built up a relationship with actually a lot of people who, by any definition of a social work professional, would say these are pretty hopeless people. And because we took that approach, when we opened the playgroup, we got our equipment, we opened up, and we invited the parents to come along as well, and they were curious and they came, and not only did they come, but they loved it so much, some of them actually stayed for the whole morning very often and helped. And so we thought, well, hang on a minute, we can actually encourage parents themselves to become knowledgeable about children's play. I mean, it sounds more as if, you know, we had an absolute game plan, but it was embryonic and it evolved. And gradually we realised, well, a lot of the parents told their friends, and we got to a point where the facility we had wasn't big enough. And so I can't quite remember how we found the second premise, which was a youth club facility at the top of St Luke's Road, called the Metro Club, which is a youth club. by that time we had a group of mums who were very keen to learn more about play. We went to some day conferences on children's issues. I once drove a carload of mums up to Leeds to pressure, I think it was Sir Keith Joseph, who was then the Tory minister, about, I think there was something happened, can't remember the exact, but we were lobbying him about the need for children's play and to change government policy. And he just was outraged that these mums turned up. And I mean, we lobbied him in the interval in the conference, but, you know, like, what are you doing here? You know, so, I mean, it's very hard to describe attitudes towards people from the sharp end of deprived communities. Like, you know, what rights do you have? So we were challenging on lots of different fronts, but in a very sort of constrained way. Somebody told me about this organisation called the Bernard Van Leer Foundation that gave grants to just such a group as us. I mean, I have to say it was a multi-ethnic group of children. And that in itself, at the time, was quite controversial. The Bernard Van Leer charity, I think, actually did a lot of work in South Africa in those inner city townships where, you know, it was mainly underprivileged black South Africans who were having hard times. So they were very sympathetic to the concept of a multiracial playgroup, which is a term that we use in a very general sense to say this area is full of people from all over and their needs are not being met. But we needed someone who would make it their full-time job to do that outreach work in the community. So luckily we got a grant. I was amazed. I think it was the first formal money I'd ever raised, and I can't remember what it was, but it was enough to fund a community work, I think, for 2 or 3 years. And that's when we employed, we advertised, and Judy Wilcox turned up. A qualified teacher living in the area, was associated through her own contacts with other activists, and she turned out to be absolutely amazing, and her commitment has gone on for the next 35 years. I mean, just she had that ability to do that outreach work and encourage enthusiasm in others. And so we were then at the point that we needed another nursery. And that was when, by this time, other people had come on board, by the way, and were taking up the same issues about the need for good childcare provision in the area, not just in summer play programmes, but generally opening the squares for children during the whole year, somewhere to play. But with some supervision. Again, it was, I think, a lot of discussions happened in these community action meetings that used to happen at the Notting Hill People's Association, where they said, look, you know, these facilities should be used for the good of the local community. This is spare land in a very built-up area, and surely we can develop community facilities under the motorway. And, of course, in that discussion, well, what kind of facilities do you want on the motorway? And lots of people said we need another childcare provision. And that took quite a few years to negotiate the building and to open the Maxilla Nursery. So I think the whole thing shifted, you know, a seismic shift, because it did also respond to that period where the voices of local people in terms of addressing their needs were beginning to be felt and respected. I think that probably is a key word, you know, respectful. These are people who have very important things to tell us, and important that they are partners in the development of these social provision that it's not ever top down. And I think those lessons were learned over the years. I'm not saying it was smooth going, it certainly wasn't. And I'm sure the same applies to what happened at Maxilla. Nothing was easy. A lot of pressure had to be put on various key organisations to continue to get their support. But I think the outcome was more than justified because of the high level of respect that Maxilla gained over the years and how it did obviously change people's lives. And parents as well as children, I think that was a great lesson that came out of it. The parents were always part of the development and their views were always taken into account.
I'm aware that we didn't touch on your involvement when the under threes sadly had to be shut down, and I wondered if you had anything that you wanted to say
about the closure of Maxilla. Well, I did rejoin the committee, and for a time I was the chair in its later years. I was originally on, then I came off for a long time, but kept in touch with a little bit with what was going on, but only indirectly, mainly through my friendships with Jenny and others. Judy and others. I suspect, I've got no way of proving it, but I think Maxilla formally probably may always have been seen as a bit of a thorn in the side of Kensington Chelsea, because I think some of the programmes that Maxilla set up were very challenging. Again, a bit like when we set up our little program, you were challenging the status quo or the customs or the approach to what developments, it's probably a different approach to providing services for the under fives. So when I rejoined, there was this transition going on anyway between the only way we're going to survive is to turn ourselves into a sure start program. That was my understanding. I'm not sure how accurate that was, but it seemed a good idea because it was about probably securing a more sound financial future. And I was there when it suddenly imploded, really, because things came to a head over the funding with the council, and there was no doubt about it that the Maxilla couldn't survive on just voluntary contributions from various charities. I think it's becoming harder and harder to fill the gap. And because, of course, the cost of any childcare facility has become so expensive that unless you can secure, you can't plan for the next 4 or 5 years unless you've got a secure financial programme. And I'm not quite sure what went on behind the scenes at council level, but at the very last minute, the money didn't come through. Maxilla was hoisted by its own petard. It was responding more and more, and it didn't really have the resources to meet those needs. So, and I think the council were only looking at what they saw on the ground when they visited, but they could no way have really gathered the complexity of the Maxilla as a much wider community-based resource that people, for all kinds of reasons, valued. I don't know whether Maxilla had enough champions at the decision-making level to say, you cannot let this facility go under. There may be problems happening in any organisation, but do we want to save this for the good of that community? And I have no idea whether there were allies that were sufficiently vociferous at that end that should have stood up and said, you can't get, reform it if, constrict what it does, it can't meet the needs of our community, but you shouldn't just let this go under.